Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome to Hoovering, the podcast about eating. I'm Jessica Fostercue. I love eating as much as anything else in the world, but also it sometimes brings me conflict, shame, and all sorts of other things that are rubbish. It's complicated and I think fascinating. This is a conversation with an interesting soul, not just about food, but about gobbling it up, or if you will, hoovering. Hello, champs. This is a particularly juicy episode, please. It's lovely and funny, but also it's a brainy one. I'm hoovering with the co-founder of Zoe Nutrition. It's Jonathan Wolf. He's an absolute clever clogs. If you've never heard of Zoe, they are, in my opinion, amazing. They are a... I don't know how to describe it. He describes them in the podcast, so I'll let him do it officially. I believe that they are revolutionising... starting a revolution and popularising a massive re-education in terms of how we learn about and how we perceive and how we action health benefits and or negatives of food and drink and the things that we eat and consume. They look at things from the point of view of gut health. I'm not doing them justice. I'm going to let you wait until we get into the podcast in just a few moments and let Jonathan describe himself, what they do. But they are taking like enormous studies. Anyone can become part of their studies to look at actually how different types of eating affect different people uniquely and individually. And oh, they are doing some incredible work in terms of myth busting, overturning, you know, absolute rubbish that we've been taught over the decades. I think they're amazing. And I can't wait for you to hear my conversation with him. First, though, thanks for listening to Hoovering. Could you do me a favour and tell everyone else about it? Thanks. You can do that in one easy way by just subscribing to the podcast or giving it a 5-star review. I need to tell you that there's a Hoovering Live coming up Saturday, the 8th of October, 1 p.m. at the Balham Bedford Pub. It's a part of a new podcast festival that sounds really lovely. There's brilliant other podcasts on as well. It's called The Cheerful Earful. I will have an amazing guest or two. It's at 1 p.m. It's at lunchtime. Come and join us. Have some lunch. We can eat, talk about eating. We can meet. It would be so nice. Please come. If you are my patron, you get a third off your ticket price. There should be a message in your inbox at time of listening. If you don't know what being my patron is, can you go to patreon.com/thehooveringpod and you'll see all sorts of amazing things I will swap you in exchange for as little as £2 a month towards keeping this podcast afloat, including discount tickets to live shows like The Cheerful Earful on the 8th of October at 1 p.m. My show as a stand-up wench is well on tour now. I'm into the tour. I've already been to Bath and Maidenhead. I've been to Maidenhead the night the Queen died. You're welcome. I stayed and did the show. You're so welcome. Anyway, I'm coming all over the place, all over September, October, November. I've still got Colchester, Newcastle, Glasgow, Edinburgh, Exeter, Dorchester, Salisbury, loads of places. Bristol, I'm in a huge venue in Bristol. There's hundreds of you already coming. London, massive venue. That one's nearly sold out, even though it's an absolute whopper. Come, please, and see Wench. I would love to have you, Hoovering listeners, at that show. Tickets to Where to Come and See Hoovering Live and to come and see Wench on tour are, as ever, there's a link in the podcast notes, but also, as always, they're in my website, jessicafostercute.com. Click on My Doings. So, let's get into this. The only warning, really, is that Jonathan and I do talk about body weight, but only in the sense that I ask to clarify some of the language sometimes in Zoe's output about weight loss as a motivator. I'm pretty open about that. I don't think being very useful. But we clear that up really early on. No other warnings, really, other than to prepare yourself, please, for what I'm going to say about my own podcast. Is I think this is a really fascinating and hopefully fun, engaging conversation. Yeah, I think it's okay to blow your own trumpet that much when you're lucky enough to have guests as brilliant as this. Also, don't worry about eating noise. I think anybody who listens to this podcast can't be too fussy about hearing eating, but also...
That's really funny. I was thinking that I've got food in front of me and that if I ever did that during my own podcast, then Rich, who's the producer, would shout at me and possibly quit. So I love the fact that you're encouraging me to stuff my face while we're talking.
Well, it's literally the podcast. What the podcast is would be so... would be lost without it, actually. I do know people who are like, I'm so interested in eating, but they've got, there's a name for it, isn't there? Like a proper, a phobia. Is it misophobia?
Misophonia, I think. And misophonia, the reason why I know this is that my son looked this up on his phone this weekend because my wife has this, but it's very specific. It's only the way that I eat and drink that drives her mad. She's totally fine with everybody else in the world. So I don't know if that is misophonia or just very specific, something to do with being married. But she totally has this. She can't bear the way that the sounds I make when I eat. And after this, she'll probably prove to the whole world who listens to this podcast that I'm a really noisy eater. So I'll be like, okay,
it is. That is so funny. I love it. Well, okay. So first things first, we've met on Zoom. Because life is full. But we've met, actually it's a surprise what each other are having for lunch, although you have sent me a really beautiful photo. And actually I think they've gone comically similar in our efforts when it came to lunch. So I would love to know, please, what you're having for lunch. I think the brief was something like, oh, we eat something that makes you feel like you're going to live forever and basically try and really impress each other when it comes certainly to gut health. We'll see how we do.
So this actually is what I always eat on Monday. So I work mainly from home.
Right.
And so actually I was really disorganized, had sort of missed this brief. So there was only one thing I was going to pretty much, which is this. So it is a salad,
right.
But that doesn't mean it's mainly leaves. In fact, there is a little bit of leaves, but there is an entire buffalo mozzarella in it, which already I think probably cheers people up who are thinking about this. There are lots of different plants, which is one of the key things if you want to understand how to. I don't think anyone can promise you to live forever, Jess.
But no, I know, actually. I think that's probably one thing that quite literally no one can promise us. But there we go.
I'm definitely not promising that. But I think if you would like to maximize sort of healthy living, which I think is probably more achievable, then I think one of the things that the science really talks about now is this amazing power of all of these different plants. And so this diversity of plants is really important. So I have got in here artichokes out of a tin because they stay in oil for ages. Olives also out of a tin. I've got some beetroot. I've got some sweet corn. I've got some tomatoes. I have got some quinoa also out of a packet, just all pre-cooked from the supermarkets, all super easy. And then covered in lots of olive oil, also balsamic vinegar, which is mainly sugar, but tastes really good. And that's
so
okay. This is all about how you put this all together.
Yeah.
And then I have sprinkled on some seeds, which I like, and add, each seed is actually a plant. So like mixed seeds, you add
of
like
course.
Half a dozen instantly. So yeah, it's a brilliant sheet. And then I have added some sumac, which is new for me. And lovely. I did a podcast with this amazing scientist who's also a sort of expert on spices. Amazing. And there's all of this new evidence that spices don't just taste great. They actually really do have properties that can improve your health. And this is still relatively early. Anyway, she convinced me and my wife that we need to start to introduce spice, which I have always sort of thought of as like, that's when you have like a curry or a Thai food, you know, like it's exotic and foreign.
We've got very British takes on that, haven't we? Where we're like, seasoning, that's for a treat. That's for an evening treat.
you're so right. So that's definitely how I grew up and Justin also. So we went out, Justin actually went out and bought about 15 spices after listening to this podcast. Now, the only problem is we don't really know what to do with them. And Kanchan, who did this, who's Indian, is like totally confident. She tells you about all the easy ways you can do it. But actually, if you're not a chef, and I'm definitely not, it's still a bit intimidating. But sumac, she's like, you can add to everything. So I'm like, okay, that's easy. So that added on salt and pepper, and it's in front of me.
Glorious. Okay, well, feel free to start eating that and eat that as we chat. I've gone quite similar in the sense I didn't have loads of time to prep, but I've got a salad with an avocado. I'm really hungry, basically. I've already done some exercise today and I've got more that I'm going to go and do later for fun, for joy.
That's great.
I've got half an avocado. I haven't mucked about. Also, I don't know how much longer it was for this world. So
I have avocado in this one as well. I just forgot about it because avocado is an almost magical food in terms of its health properties. So
I love it. It's so delicious. I've got some orange pepper, some tomatoes. I've got the dying ends of a lettuce, but I felt snazzy about it because it had some darker leaves. And I've been watching your output about, is it polyphenols in the dark?
Polyphenols, that's right.
Polyphenols, yes, I've seen it
that's
wrong.
That's right.
And then some lamb's lettuce, which my partner can never remember the name of and calls lamb's legs, and she's vegetarian, so that always tickles me. Especially when I'm having a really planty lunch with no meat anywhere near it. Some really lovely olives from a plastic packet rather than a jar, but yeah, they've been around for a while. And then the main bit is I've got these like, I think the original company was called Dr. Cargs, but now M&S do a perfect rip-off version of these like chunky crisp bread things. They're covered in seeds, but they're like, they're a bit thicker than it's sort of like a leveled up modern Ryvita. I was going to say,
it looks like a very good, it looks like a sort of Ponzi Ryvita. Is that?
Yeah, it's a Ponzi Ryvita. And they were, I mean, the original, maybe I'll cut it out, but like the original brand, they really have priced them up. But M&S and Lidl have copied them brilliantly, and they're covered in seeds on the bottom. And then I've got, and the bit that I, so first of all, I'll brag, I've also pickled my own beetroot.
Okay, that is very impressive.
That's my spicy element. It's so easy, but there's some star anise and some chili seeds in with the pickle. So I've used, I haven't got oil, but I've used some of the
pickling. I should be calling
liquor.
You to understand how to add spices to my food. I'm impressed. That's way above my pay grade.
These have been pickled. I would say I've been working away all summer. So these are now, I'm going to say borderline unpleasantly spicy, but I'm into it. And then I've got this, the only kind of, I would say, I'm not embarrassed, but the only processed bit, like beyond just the making of cheese, is that I've got this like blue cheese spread on top, and then I did some bonus seeds on top of that. But the blue cheese it's Santa Gur, and they've brought out this. Oh God. I mean, I love Santa Gur, and I should have just brought that if I was trying to be really show off to you, but they've brought out this one. It's like a Santa Gur cream, and it's basically the blue cheese, but with added milk and then some E-numbers. And it's so delicious. So that's like my protein on there. And then and a glass of plain kefir to really show off, some fermented yogurt drink.
Well, I think that's very, very impressive.
Thanks. You too.
I was worried that you were going to be like, my God, your lunch sounds so healthy. So now I'm actually...
No! I love everything. I just love eating loads of everything, nutritionally dense, glorious foods, and also whatever I feel like. But I think actually, so for me, if I have permission to eat whatever I want, including
stuff that's got nothing really in it nutritionally, it just tastes nice, then if I know I can have it whenever I want, I don't actually want it all the time. Like, I think
that's really it's really interesting. I think one of the things we talk a lot about at Zoe is the idea that no food is off limits.
Yeah.
And my background, to be clear, I'm not a dietitian. I don't have a nutrition science background. My background is much more sort of data science, but and many nutritionists and dietitians in the company. And I think this is one of the big insights that they bring, which is that there is so much guilt associated with food, and this leads to really terrible behavior. And actually, it leads people also to this thing where they start to cut out all of these foods. I'm trying to be healthy, and that's about removing things. And actually, what's really interesting is all the latest science says it's the reverse. So what you want to be doing is very similar to the meal you're eating. It's about diversity. It's about how do you add things in.
Yeah.
So, nothing should be off limits. The question is when you look at your overall diet. So what are you eating across the week? Clearly, if you eat cake twice a day for a whole week, you're probably not going to feel great at the end of the week. Equally well, if you're saying, oh, you can never have cake, like it's miserable. Yeah. So that doesn't make sense either. And it's not true also. I think that's really important. It's not true that you could sort of contaminate yourself by like, I have a bit of cake and somehow it's a poison for my body. This is not true, right? So this is about understanding like what's the overall intake and how are you doing something that, I mean, I think the question is what motivates you, but for many of us, it's like just feeling good.
Yeah, feeling good. Exactly that. Yeah, yeah.
Yum in my tum.
It's so interesting you said that thing about poisoning. It does feel like there's a particularly strong fad in kind of, I suppose, like Instagram wellness influencers at the moment, talking about food being toxic or clean. I think that's the latest kind of diet industry language, I would say, isn't it? It's about, things being poisonous or, you know, dirty. And it's like, oh gosh, it really, from everything I feel like I've learned so far, that's such an overly basic view of nutrition.
I think what's interesting is, you know, I've been lucky enough to spend the last, so I guess 6 years with a lot of the best nutritional scientists in the world. And what's interesting is I've never once heard them use the word clean. I never once heard them use the word toxic, except for like literally there's like a toxic bacteria, which if you get it in your mouth will kill you. Okay, that's toxic. So I've heard them use it in that context only. So these aren't words that are used. And I think what's interesting is even with people who have serious food intolerances. And that was part of the reason I got into Zoe originally is I had food intolerances in my 20s. But even with people who have really serious food intolerances, and I was lucky I never had so seriously, if they're not allergies, which is a separate thing, again, it's not like these foods are toxic to you. It's about you can only manage a certain quantity.
Yeah.
And I think increasingly we believe that this is very related to your gut microbiome, the state of these sort of trillions of bacteria inside you. And that actually there's probably a pathway where if you can sort of improve your gut microbiome and improve your gut, then actually you might well be able to eat a lot more of these foods that are currently causing you the problem. So again, it's the reverse of excluding them. It's actually understanding how do you build more and more diversity? How do you add more of these good foods, which tend to be things that are supporting your gut? So it's a lot of plants, which are all very different, that have all of these different fibers and chemicals in that feed different little bugs inside you can actually really improve. And so I think that's really brilliant because it's the reverse of, it's all about thinking about how many calories you eat and you've got to constrain and you've got to stop now. Or it's all about how you mustn't eat gluten because it's bad for everybody. Because I think all of those are quite depressing, right? If you think about food, which is a great pleasure.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the ethos of this podcast through and through. Take joy where there is joy. But obviously, it's just, it is so interesting. So I guess actually, maybe talk to me a little bit about Zoe, which you're the co-founder of, just in case anybody listening to my silly podcast haven't heard of you yet.
I'm sure lots of them haven't. And I'm sorry, I should have explained that already.
No,
so,
not at all.
So Zoe is about personalized nutrition. We actually run the world's largest nutrition science study in order to understand how each of us, our bodies respond to food. And that's because it turns out that we're not all the same. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll probably think, well, it's obvious we're not all the same, right? But actually, the way that science has talked about food, but actually, to be honest, most things in terms of healthcare, right? It creates a sort of one size fits all plan for all of us, because it's hard enough to understand just like that one single piece of advice before you get to the point that actually we're not all the same. And so what Zoe is doing is trying to understand how do each of us respond to food so that we can understand what's best for us in order to, above all, improve our health, but also help us to manage our weight.
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting. And I think in terms of our conversation today, because I think with this podcast, I don't know, that focus on weight loss, I think I've been on a journey over the course of 4 years of doing this podcast personally, and in terms of the conversations I've had and in terms of the education I've had, and still feel like it's one of those things, isn't it, where I imagine you have this more than anyone, but because you're so deep into the actual science of it. But, you know, the more you know, the more you know you've got to know. But I have come to, I think, quite a fundamental belief personally that our kind of obsession as a society with our weight is actually sort of really unhelpful in terms of a conversation about health. And that's, so I think for the purposes of our conversation, if you're up for it, I'm going to sideline the weight thing, because the stuff to do with your work that I'm so kind of passionate about and impressed by is that we're learning more about sort of actually how we eat can genuinely affect our physical and mental health, like actual wellness from like roots up. Because actually, you know, I've come to a place where, you know, if I was on a BMI chart, I'm obese, but I am the healthiest I've ever been. I'm the strongest, the fittest, but I'm eating so well. I'm drinking the least, you know, but you know, I'm not bragging. I'm saying, but I've come to that from a place of giving up trying to be thin, because that was never going to happen for me. So I have had to, but you know, and there would have been a long patch of time where I don't think I'd have been even being able to look at work that's focused on weight loss, because it feels like it's asking me to do something I that can't be my focus. And I think it's the same for a lot of people. It comes back down to what you just said, actually. I think if you say to people, well, you need to change your body, and to do that, you're going to have to do less of this, isn't this? I think even if that, like, well, you don't need to change your body. You just need to put more plants in, put as many plants as you can into your diet, and, you know, do this, that, the other bit, do more of these things, and do things, I think, for the motivation of feeling better and taking joy where there is joy. And then you've got this, I don't know, I have a different mindset on that. So, but I've still, I mean, I'm so impressed by the stuff you guys have done. There's so many surprises, aren't there? I wonder if we could get into some of those, like,
I'd be delighted. And just before we do that, say that I really agree with everything you said. So, you know, Zoe is not a weight loss program. That's not at all what it's focused on. Good. I think that it is focused on understanding, like, what's the right food for you that works with your biology, that is going to sustain your long-term health. And really, as a byproduct of that, you should have better control over your weight than you have done in the past.
So we see
very widely varying outcomes with the current advice that we give in terms of weight. But what's clear is we always talk about healthy weight, right? What matters ultimately is your health. And I think that what is interesting is for a lot of people when they go on the program with Zoe, is the thing that they're really struck by is a shift in energy. And we get these really amazing results where sort of more than 80% of people who are following the program say, look, I've just got more energy than I had before. Mm. And so they don't necessarily come in thinking that's the thing that they're most interested in. But I think it sounds a bit like your own journey, Jess. Like, that's a really profound shift. And I think what's interesting is the science, and maybe this is where you want to go, increasingly shows this link between what we eat, not just, I think, to some of the more obvious sort of metabolic things, like whether you might get diabetes or heart disease, but I think really amazing is all of this new research about how it affects things like our mood, can even impact whether or not we get depression.
Oh, and, I mean, you know, those isn't that extraordinary?
I mean, think so.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I mean, there are, it's like you say, I think we think of things as such binary or kind of black and white terms, don't we? In the sense of, I think most people know that if all you ate was Mars bars or McDonald's is for a week, you know, it's the supersize me, you know, those kind of very kind of on the nose experiments. Of course, you're going to feel like shit. But then there's I don't think we think about the nuance in that as often. And often you're not in control. I mean, you know, we're busy. People have constraints in terms of what they can afford, et cetera. How many, they've got families, stress, sleep, masses of things, other things. But just in terms of like what you eat, if you are able to get to a point where you're tuned in to, I can't tell the difference between how one meal has made me feel particularly. I think that's the end game. I think you do get people who are so mindful and do everything so, you know, slowly and on point that they're like, well, that carrot made me really buzzy for 20 minutes. I can't think of it like that, but I can think of things in terms of blocks of time, like weeks perhaps, and think, yeah, I fundamentally... I've just come back, for example, from the Edinburgh Fringe Festival where I was for the whole month. And it's a really surreal time in the sense that it's been years since it's been on in its entirety because of COVID. And actually taking my body back to being that full of adrenaline and then that adrenaline dump every day for a month, you know.
That's exhausting.
My body hated it, but I made it for the first time ever. Continued, and it's so hard to keep cooking basically and not eat all your meals.
Actually, because I think very hard to eat well,
yeah,
in that sort of traveling setting as well, right?
Because especially if you're not, I'm lucky enough I can afford to eat out well, if you know what I mean. I can go for sushi or I can go for, but ultimately, there will be times where you're working till 1 a.m. and then you're actually really bloody hungry just before you go to bed. And then you can only get crap, like nutritionally crap food. That's a bad thing to say. I'll probably cut that out. But like you can only get like chips at 1 a.m. You know, there's not, you can't find somewhere to go and get.
It's a big issue because it's not just. Yeah. Probably people going to Edinburgh Fringe is relatively narrow fraction.
Yeah, I know. I've been quite niche.
But if there's people listening to this who do shift work, right? So if you are a nurse, for example, or you're doing anything that is probably around the huge logistics, I think after COVID we realize, right, there's millions of people who actually allow us to sit at home, then actually the food that you have is terrible. And I think I do think like nurses is a brilliant example of this because they're literally in hospitals, right? This is the thing where we're most focused on trying to keep people healthy and alive.
Yeah.
And the people who are working away there are basically getting given terrible food because often the only thing that's available is something out of a vending machine, right? So that's got to be ultra processed, can last for months without anything touching it. And you haven't really got any alternatives. And if you do, there is real data around this. You know, if that is what you're eating consistently, then it only amplifies what is already a problem, which is shift work is really bad for your sleep, which is then very bad for your body. So I think these are, the sort of access to good food is one of the things I've got more and more passionate about because you're right, you're at home and if you can afford to buy yourself food and you know how to make it, then something you can eat really well.
Yeah.
And the question is, you know, I have kids. So I have a 14-year-old as well as a 3-year-old. And then we can talk about food.
Amazing.
It's a really challenging thing. But like my 14-year-old, he's just completely free, right? Like he can do whatever he wants, he can buy what he wants, eat what he wants. I'm just struck by sort of how poor the food is if he just goes into like a corner shop, right? And you want to buy, he's going to buy some snack. Yeah. It's like, even if he was going to listen to me, which is by no means given, but even if he was going to listen to me, it's like really hard to find food that actually, you know, I would feel is very good for you. So if you're going to making it hard for people to eat the food that's going to support your health, right? Going to support these trillions of bacteria inside you. How can you be surprised that we sort of have this epidemic of all of these lifestyle diseases?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's so bonkers, isn't it? And that the nurse's example is so stark. I mean, it's utterly bizarre that a hospital is such a hard place to get a really delicious, nutritionally great meal in. It's essentially kind of little sandwich shops or kind of pharmacies that have got a food fridge in with an ancient sandwich in it or bust, isn't it? Or vending machines. Utterly bizarre. But it's more important to keep nurses healthy than comedians. That's an absolute given. I really do think I'll hold firm on that one.
I don't know. I think there were times in the last couple of years when we all really needed a laugh, to be honest. So maybe to turn that into something more serious, I think that mental health has been one of the biggest issues that has come out of COVID. And I think I myself found it really difficult.
Yeah, me
so,
too.
And I'm not someone who's historically really thought of themselves as having like a lot of mental health challenges.
Yeah.
And actually, I found it really tough, mm-hmm. right? As someone who's a quite extrovert, likes being with people, and suddenly sort of being locked up in my house for such a long time.
Yeah.
I was, you know, I really felt it. So yeah. I think making people laugh is higher value than you are.
Oh, thanks, Jonathan. Okay. Thanks. But yeah, I mean, it is bizarre. And it was a bizarre month. It was a bizarre August in terms of, and it's really hard to look after yourself. And actually, I think the two things I promised myself I'd keep up this August, which I've never done for a whole fringe before, are I do weightlifting and CrossFit, and I love it. And I thought, well, I won't be able to train with the regularity I do at home, but do some, you know, try and do at least half as much. And then I think kind of set realistic goals. I'm not going to be able to cook or batch cook in the way I would at home. I have my son with me, and we'll get into that in a minute. But you know, actually just make sure there's loads of plants in your diet all the way through. And it helped me into a point. I'd stay still by the last week. I thought, my body is tired. But perhaps it took me longer. Hopefully it took me longer to start feeling like a bit of a withered husk than it had in previous years.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
With parenting, I feel like when my son was tiny, when he was a little baby, I had this real focus on making sure his, you know, his diet was really great. You know, I made sure I loved having him try things for the first time. And I really, you know, but to my detriment, I would say, and, you know, I'd make sure there was all these different things for him to try, and he was getting loads of different types of food.
Well, you're like, you're taking all of these really exotic foods and pureeing them and put them into tiny little things in the freezer. Is that
frozen
little
pots? Still got the pots. Yeah. All of that.
I remember that. Absolutely. It's part of the enormous parent guilt. That a middle class parent in the Western world goes through now. And where I think about my grandparents, if they saw this now, they'd just be like, "You're mad. What are you doing? Like, how do you, you know, how do you think anyone of our ancestors ever had time to like puree little pots of aubergine and carefully spoon like half a spoon into their mouth?" But you were just like, "Oh, that's normal, because that's what everybody else who is going through their first child is doing," right?
Yeah, totally.
Do you have any friends who have like three or four children?
Yeah, I do. And by the fourth child, that's not really happening, is it? That's
I think what's funny is by the fourth child, like, you know, the fourth child's lucky to get fed at all, right? I mean, there's three other children that you're worrying about. And so it's like, oh, you just have a bit of whatever sort of around. Oh, I forgot to feed the baby. So, and what's interesting is they always seem to grow up sort of, you know, I'm an eldest child.
Uh-huh, me too.
You know, if you're the youngest of the four, just much more well-adjusted, sort of chilled out. And I haven't seen the scientific evidence for this, but I would imagine that just as it's true that if you have a pet, that's actually better for sort of lower allergies and improved microbiome.
Yeah,
I would bet that if you have like, you know, five older siblings, then in a similar way that nothing could possibly be as clean as otherwise, that it's probably better for your microbiome as well. So
it's got to be the case, isn't it?
I think so. I'm not suggesting that everyone should have six children because I personally think two is definitely enough.
I'm finding one to be plenty. But yeah,
well, I think I think that they're wonderful, but they are an awful lot of work.
Agreed.
Clearly true.
But so we have this like middle class guilt, I think, and certainly in this country when it comes to feeding toddlers. But I now, even with one child, now that he's six, even as a child who's prepared to try anything, I would say now, you know, I feel totally in control of what I eat again. But now getting what I would consider to be enough fruit and vegetables into him is an effort because that's not the things he's drawn to. That's not the foods that are targeted to him. Even in a really good restaurant, the kids' menu will sometimes be rubbish, you know, and actually you have to say, well, why don't you choose from the grown-up menu, actually? Because all they've really got is nuggets and pizza on the kids' menu. And it's more expensive, but that's frustrating as well to me that kids' menus... the assumption is that kids are only going to eat things that are yellow and fried. Like, it's like, well, they're not making it easy.
I think it's really interesting, right? Because I'm sort of interested in going through this now with my little one who's just turned three. And before you even get to what's available outside, I mean, what I'm struck by is how desperately hard she has worked to get rid of all the vegetables in her diet. So, you know, I think that you're so pleased when they're 12 months old and they eat everything, because at this point they're like, oh, everything is like, you know, they can't really differentiate. It's all new. It's all mush. So they'll eat every vegetable and every color. And then you turn around at age three, you suddenly discover that, as you said, they basically will only eat beige food.
Yeah.
They'll take any starch, delighted by a starch. And on everything else, like, it's got a lot of color in it. I'm not sure I really want that. Certainly, I mean, green is definitely out. But just in general, I do find it's really interesting. There is something that's not just society, right? There is something instinctive in us as children that is sort of saying, I want these really energy, dense, carb heavy foods, you know, like a pasta, right? For example, or bread, things that almost all children will very happily eat.
Yeah.
Very happy to eat chips, right? So layer on something which has got the fat on top, but still has this very simple, like low fiber, very energy dense. So they'll eat all of that. And then they'll happily turn away from all these other things, which are like really healthy for them. As you said, you talk about, I mean, I'm struck that, you know, my daughter, even there's fruits, right? She used to love fruits, but you know, now she discovered what an ice cream is.
Yeah.
Like a lot less excited than she was when she was, you know, a year old. And I think it's interesting because that's hard. And I get anxious about it because there is, you know, I have a bit of health anxiety. I have to be honest about it. And I worry about children and making sure that I'm sort of setting them up in the best possible way. And I think with all of this latest science telling you just how important your gut microbiome is, about how eating the right food really can set you up for life, I do worry that I know this. As you said, I think I've really improved. I mean, I ate terribly for the first half of my life, more than half of my life. But it's really hard to get them to, it's really hard to get them to eat well. And I think you've just got, you know, any parent listening will know you've got to pick your battles.
Yeah.
So I focus more on what's the thing that I can add. So, for example, she really likes nuts. And
that's
so we continue to push that. But we also make clear it's a treat. So you're not allowed limitless nuts, because I think one of the things I've realized, it's like you're constantly negotiating with your children, isn't it?
Constant.
If they can have limitless, they'd like lose interest. But if there's like some restriction, then clearly it's good. It's a treat. So I think I'd focus on that. And then she does still really like avocados. Interestingly, is one of the few things she hasn't thrown over. But it's really hard. And as you said, that's before you go out, because I agree. And it's particularly true here in the UK, right? The kids' menu will literally be chicken nuggets, pasta with tomato sauce, burger and chips. And that's sort of it, right?
That's
it's the same
it,
everywhere you go. And it's like, wow, there is no fiber in any of that. In fact, it's all just brown.
Yeah.
And of course, that might be part of the option, but it makes it, I think it's hard. It's part of the
it's
way
tricky.
That our diets, yeah.
Yeah. And often there'll be like a kind of token that, what you know, you can have sweet corn or some cherry tomatoes beside that. And it's like, oh, it would be better
that's
if you would just do, you know, a miniature portion of the vegetarian lasagna that's going to have maybe four vegetables in it. You know, that. I don't know. Anyway, I think there's room for improvement there in terms of, but then also, I suppose, is it supply and demand? I don't know. I don't know how this stuff works. I would love there to be more plant dense options for kids in mainstream restaurants with a kids menu.
Say scrumdiddlyumptious.
Hello.
And then you can be in my podcast.
Scrumdiddlyumptious.
Well, you talked about having sort of health anxiety. Let's talk about eating growing up for you.
Absolutely. And I think it's relevant, because when I ended up doing my own Zoe test, actually, I discovered that lots of things I had been eating were really not good. And I thought that I was eating healthily, which is one of the things I think was really, really surprising for me. But I grew up, I grew up in a household where my dad had been diagnosed with high cholesterol in his late 20s, so very early.
Oh, wow,
right? So they were very concerned about this. And the advice at that point from the doctors was, you have to give up eating fat and any foods that contain cholesterol. And so my mother basically changed the whole, and she did the cooking at home. Basically, from that point onwards, I think changed the whole diet to something that was really low in fat in order to be healthy for my dad. And so as a result of what happens when you give up all of these fats is basically, obviously, you eat a lot more carbohydrates than you would do otherwise. And in general, what you do is you eat a lot more refined carbohydrates. So, you know, I would grow up eating a lot of pasta, for example, at home, which I love. Who doesn't love pasta? Definitely lots of bread. And I remember when I grew up, like for my dad loved eggs, but for him, having an egg was like this really guilty treat, like having cake, right? Because the doctors had said, this is really terrible for you. You must eat this egg. So I remember I grew up in, you know, and my mother is a good cook. She also works. So, you know, I think food was also, you know, dinner time was definitely something you could prepare very fast after she got home.
Yeah.
I definitely grew up eating a lot of carbohydrate, and it was definitely influenced by this.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that's interesting is we no longer believe in any of that advice.
Yeah.
So basically everything, Jess, that my dad was told was wrong. And in fact, switching to this much more like highly refined carbohydrate diet is the opposite of what would be at least sort of Zoe's cutting edge advice for what to do. So it's a classic example of why I think a lot of people listening, like, I'm confused about what to eat. I don't know if I really believe, you know, the advice I've been given. And it is true that, you know, nutritional guidelines have really changed over time. So anyway, that is sort of what I grew up a lot with. And if you think, thinking about like what I have changed going to Zoe. So one example of this was by the time I was doing Zoe, I was interested in food. I wanted to be eating healthily. And so I would have porridge every morning for breakfast because you know, we've all seen all those ads, right? Telling you that it's like this heart healthy food. It's like a really good breakfast. You've seen those ads?
Yeah. It's also another food that gets gets really promoted in the fitness world, I would say, as well, because it's, you can add protein powders to it. You know, it's whole oats, it's slow burn energy. It's touted as like, it's kind of on, it's on the list of things that, you know, you think of as athletes as having every day, isn't it?
Well, that's anyway. Interesting. So yeah. It was even before you could get the Zoe test kit to be able to measure your own responses. I was actually part of one of the first clinical studies where they put a continuous blood sugar sensor on my arm, which is also something you do if you do the Zoe product. And I could see what happened to my blood sugar. And what is amazing is I ate my normal breakfast and my blood sugar went through the roof.
Okay.
So rather than it being, as you described, this sort of slow release, really good food, I actually had some of the worst spiking of my blood sugar. And I don't want to get into stuff that's really technical right here, but basically it's not, you know, if you're sending your blood sugar through the sky, that's generally not a very good thing.
Yeah.
And that's what was happening with this porridge. And part of this is because it turned out that my blood sugar control is really bad. So Jess, you know, I was really surprised by this because I was not particularly overweight. You know, I wasn't worried about this, but actually my blood sugar control was amongst the worst of all the people who went through this study.
God.
And therefore these foods that were, it's not good, is it? No. On the other hand, it turns out that my blood fat control, so this is what happens when you eat foods with fat in them. So whether that's an egg or cheese or oil or whatever, that goes into your blood. So you have blood fat. People have heard of cholesterol. So that's an example. It's one of the fats in your blood. It turns out my control of that is really good. And the guidance for me, there's lots of further, but sort of one of the core consequences is I was basically eating this very carb heavy diet. I was not eating any cheese. I'd understood cheese was really bad for me. I'd actually given up a bunch of this because I'd been worried about food intolerances.
Yeah.
And so suddenly turning all of this on its head and saying, you know, the thing that was probably, if I was eating bread and cheese, the thing that was going to cause me the issue was the bread and not the cheese. Well, that's pretty transformational.
Yeah, so absolutely.
My breakfast has completely changed. I don't eat any of this porridge. I do still eat pasta because I love pasta, but I've switched that to whole wheat pasta.
Right.
And that is significantly better. And how I think about composing these meals is very different because of the results that I had.
Wow.
But you know, there are other people who do the test and discover that actually, you know, quite the reverse. Their blood sugar control is really good. And in that case, you know, I think we all know this, right? We all know people where, you know, somebody says, I eat exactly the same as my husband or my wife.
And I think generally it's assumed that they're just not telling the truth. But I love that it feels pretty conclusive now that two people can eat exactly the same thing and it have an entirely different impact on their body.
So I think this is exactly true. Now, I don't want anyone to go away and study think, oh, you mean I might be allowed to eat, you know, Oreos all day long? Or, you know, I mean, maybe
they can do what they like, but yes,
we're not suddenly going to say, there's nobody when we've done this test and we said, you know what, the best possible healthy food for you is like an Oreo or chocolate cake, you know, or, you know, a Coca-Cola. Like, we don't see that. And similarly, there's no one where we're saying, oh, you know what, kale is bad for you or spinach is bad for you. That doesn't happen, right? So, you know, the basic concepts of what's good and bad are clearly true, but actually so much of this is about what happens in the middle, right? Like, can I eat eggs? Can I eat cheese? If I do want to eat, you know, a bagel, is there a way that I can construct a meal around that that's going to be good for me? Well, that answer might be quite, you know, different than for somebody else. And I think the other thing that's interesting is it could be quite different through your life. So one of the things that I think is most interesting in the research for me, because you know, I basically was so ignorant around this, is the huge change that happens as women go through perimenopause and menopause.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was growing
traditionally,
up,
traditionally, most of our studies haven't been done on women, sadly. So I'm glad that's changing too.
I think it's well, there's a whole thing about this extraordinary. They had rules in America for a few decades, basically excluding women from scientific studies for what they believed were good reasons.
Yeah.
To be fair, because they were worried about things after about people being pregnant, mm-hmm. and side pregnant. But obviously, I think. Like really shocking, but yeah. I think what's amazing is that in our studies, what we've seen is that there's a profound change in the way that we metabolize our food
right.
as we go through life. But the menopause, in particular, you see this really radical shift. And for
anecdotal conversations about that with friends who say, like, I just cannot eat what I used to eat, and actually, in some instances, don't want to. If they're quite intuitive in how they eat. But a lot of, like, you know, just people really struggling with that change, I think.
Well, I think that's amazing, hard, right? So if you're basically saying, I've been eating exactly the same way, you know, maybe since I was 20 until I was 45. So, like, you know exactly how your body works.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're continuing to eat the same way. But you're feeling really different. Like, I think it's not surprising that is it's difficult to deal with, right? Because
so menopause affects what you were talking about, blood sugar control and blood fat control, essentially.
So basically, the way that so firstly, everybody is responding differently. So it's not like just one. You know, one rule. So what I'm talking about here is sort of the averages. So if you look at, for example, the average of how well a woman metabolizes, let's say like a regular standard UK lunch, which has quite a lot of fat in it. And what you see is that on average, interestingly, women are better at metabolizing food that has a lot of fat in it than men up until menopause. And there's a really big difference. So on average, you know, you and I might eat, I don't, you know, three eggs, for example, or you know, a few donuts or whatever it is, and you might well metabolize that significantly better than me. After menopause, the gap between men and women basically falls away. So, so what that means is that for a woman, on average, your ability to metabolize that food is much worse. And so you might well fail. You know what? I used to always have, like, you know, that treat at 11 o'clock in the morning, and it was fine, and it was fine. But now, actually, because your body has physically changed, right? Your biology has changed. Your ability to cope with that without it, your body not being able to clear this fat and it then leading to inflammation, which then has all of these knock-on effects. Like, it's just true that your body has changed. And so, you know, and I think we have basically treated the whole topic as taboo. So when I was growing up, no one talked about menopause at all. So again, I was saying it's really embarrassing. I never really thought about it because it wasn't something that anyone talked about.
Well, and even pre-menopause, I mean, I think that I feel like I'm part of the first generation who talk just in terms of, like, differences in how your body functions in terms of fitness, but also in terms of hunger and fullness and perception of hunger and fullness just around a menstrual cycle. I feel like I'm the first generation who are openly talking about, and even when I was at school, we wouldn't have, but in the way that young women are now. I mean, it's amazing the progress that's been made in the space of two generations, really, in that sense.
And it is amazing, right? Because these are obviously really fundamental. And by the way, that is another reason why a lot of studies have not been done on women, because there's all of this added complexity if you're doing nutritional studies.
Yeah.
If you've got this sort of monthly cycle, there are real metabolic changes. So if any of these scientists doing these studies, they can see the difference between what's happening. And so that adds a lot of complexity, right? Because unless you've got a large enough number of people, you might get them in and get them all to come back in 2 weeks later. Well, actually, shifts in your menstrual cycle are part of what you might end up measuring. So you can see that they'd be like, oh, it'd be much simpler to just measure men. And if you've got a small budget and you can only afford to do a study on 25 people, which is what most nutritional science studies are like, you can see how well-intended scientists, and this includes a lot of female scientists over the last decade, are still like, you know what, it's actually, you can't do this science because of that added complexity.
That doesn't
excuse this. I think it just tells you you need to do much larger studies. And that's a lot of sort of the story behind Zoe, is this idea. If you could start to measure thousands of people. We now have more than 30,000 people who have bought the product, and everyone who buys the product can join the science studies as well, and almost everyone does, then that allows you to start to understand things. It's just not possible if you're just measuring, you know, 25 people.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and so can anybody now sign up to Zoe and test their how their body responds to different things that they're eating and become part of this mega study?
So if they're listening in the UK, then yeah. We are live, but we have a wait list. So we've been sort of overwhelmed by the level of excitement, surprised. Which is fantastic. Yeah. Really fantastic. And I think very... really lucky. And so we are ramping up production very fast. We actually launched in April. And at that point, you know, we're just shifting sort of the first 50 kits a week. We're now we're now selling more than 1,000 a week. So it's ramping up fast. There's a wait list that you can sign up onto. And we expect to, you know, to get out of that wait list fairly soon. But I have to be honest that, you know, the interest is continuing. And so we are ramping up the ability, but there is going to be a bit of a wait. Yeah. But it is available to everybody once you're willing to put up with this this little wait. And I think that's that's what we've been really excited about, which is to take all of this science and my the scientists we work with, ultimately they're really motivated by trying to solve these scientific problems and then try and make this available to people. So yes, you can buy the product. It starts with a test kit that you do at home, where you measure your gut microbiome. So you have to give us a sample of your poo, which we take off, and we do something called shotgun sequencing. So we like smash it up into millions of pieces, which is pretty cool to understand all the microbes that are inside you. And what's amazing, Jess, is that you and I will share maybe 30% of the bacteria between
that's
us.
It.
Exactly. And yet your DNA is 99% the same as mine. So, you know, what? You and I are almost the same on DNA, but all those microbes inside you are different.
Yeah.
And there are about as many microbes inside you as you have cells. So you could think about yourself as being like half human being, half bacteria.
I love it. So it's disgusting, but I really love it.
Delicious.
Card sharks evolve into an actual thing. It's like a giant land-based shark that can also still swim, but it thinks like 50 moves ahead. It's got the luck of the Celtic, and it begins to take over land and sea, these card sharks, winning everything in sight, winning, eating everything in sight until there's nowhere left safe to hide apart from up in the sky. And because humans can't fly yet, it's an absolutely disgusting massacre. This is an apocalypse of the card sharks. Luckily, they've agreed to go back to never having existed, but only if you, and weirdly, it does have to be you, Jonathan, sing as part of a digital choir nonstop for 15 hours. So your mouth is busy, no snacks, no breaks, all whilst being strapped into a massage chair that's been put on an unpleasantly violent setting. It sounds impossible, but you do it. You're a hero. You go down in history as the person who saved us all from a card shark apocalypse. So your award really is the adulation of all people for all time, but your award in the moment, and bearing in mind you are starving from being strapped to that chair and singing for all those hours, is the feast of your dreams. Now, it's the opposite of a last meal, because you couldn't be happier, you couldn't be hungrier. I would love to know, in a fantasy situation where I actually couldn't really care about health consequences or any other consequences, what would you eat, what would you drink, and if there's a who with and where, who with and where?
Well, Jess, I have to say that is a very impressive build-up, which I can see might have taken quite a few episodes to get to. Yeah. So, I definitely wouldn't be worrying about the health consequences of the answer. So I think I would be thinking about the pleasure. And I think one of the things that food does is it really grounds you into your memories.
Yes.
So I'm sure you have that experience where you eat something and it pulls you back to some other previous events. And I think, at least in my case, the stuff that's strongest is the stuff from childhood. This is, you know, this is what's most powerful. So we regularly went on holiday when I was a child to Italy, to a place by the coast in Liguria, in the sort of northwest of Italy, which was like this amazing, you know, this amazing holiday we would do every couple of years. And so I think it's the food from there. that I would choose. And it's a place actually that I still go back to with my own family. So I think I would definitely have a seafood pasta, probably like a spaghetti scoglio is what they call it there, which is like all the different crustaceans and things like this. So definitely not a vegetarian meal. So I think that's what I would have as my main. And then the dessert has to be an Italian gelato. And when I'm on holiday, that's probably a daily activity anyway, because it's just too good.
Do you have favorite flavors?
I think they've varied over time. Mm-hmm. It's interesting. My son refused to eat anything but strawberry for the first like 8 years of his life. Then he finally moved to chocolate and was willing to do chocolate and strawberry, which is basically where he is now. Interestingly, my 3-year-old in her very first trip just now has already tried like a dozen flavors of ice cream. So just to show like this difference. It's not just like how old you are. It's like, oh, she's still trying. So I would say probably pistachio and chocolate, and then some sort of fruit one, like maybe a peach or something like this. Because I did just save the world, so I'm allowed like
you can have
three large
you want.
Scoops.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's probably what I'd go with. Oh. And there would have to be a really nice bottle of red wine to go with this as well. I think I'm probably allowed to. We have the general feedback is like a glass of red wine is really not that bad. We all know that if you drink half a bottle or more, it's really not very good. But I guess that if I just saved the entire world
this time, though, you can have. I think you probably need a bottle. To be honest,
then I agree. I think I could probably overindulge more than I would normally. I'm not a very big drinker, but I think in this particular case, I think that's what we'd be going. That's where I would go, I think.
Oh, it sounds amazing. You've chosen things that are, I would also be close to choosing. I love it. I love those options. Also, it's funny, isn't it? Like, I think sometimes even when you're talking about conjuring memories, but even when you're just describing those types of food, you can really see them as you're saying them, like, and taste them almost. Incredible. Oh, lovely choices. And thank you so much for doing my silly podcast.
Not at all, Jess. It was a real pleasure. Thank you so much for your positivity about what we're trying to do. And
I love it. I think it's so interesting.
I hope you will give it a go.
I will. At some point I need to do it, don't I? I'm going to get myself on that wait list.
You should. And I'd love to hear your feedback. It's a work in progress.
Yeah.
You know, the science is still, you know, all of this is still at early days. We're going to learn more and more and more. So, you know, I would just leave with that. It's not like we have all the answers. All of this is still early, but I think we are on this amazing path where we really can get better and better at understanding you know, what's right for each of us.
I love it. Great. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. What a brilliant episode. Are you intrigued now about Zoe? I bet you are. And they are just at Zoe on social media, Zoe. And there's a link tree on there where you can sign up to the waiting list to be part of the research and find out all that stuff about your own personal reactions to different types of eating, or just to find their really interesting and brilliant podcast, which is called Zoe Science and Nutrition. I need to explain to you that if you were to want to take part in it, you need to give them your weight, like how much you weigh. But you do not need to then track your weight in any way. That's not a necessary part of it. But that is part of the initial questions they ask you. So it's something I'm going to think about before I decide whether or not I'm definitely going to sign up for that. And they also, for obvious reasons, I think because it requires such attention to detail in terms of what people are eating and monitoring sort of your bloods and stuff like that, they don't want to work with people who are suffering with eating disorders, etc., because they're very aware that that level of monitoring could be triggering on unhelpful. So that's you fully informed, hopefully, about whether it's a process you think could be useful for you. I should also add, you do have to pay for it. It's not free to access. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. I loved making that episode. I love making almost every episode of this. No, the almost, the cheeky ones amongst you. But that one, I think, was a bit brilliant and clever. There's so much fascinating stuff going on, isn't there?
in this field of research. Make sure you're following the podcast, won't you, at The Hoovering Pod on Instagram and on Twitter. I'm on there, at Jessica Fostercue. I would love to have you join me in the audience of the next Hoovering Live, 1 p.m. Saturday the 8th of October at London's Cheerful Earful Podcast Festival in sunny Balham. Come and have lunch with me and a couple of amazing guests, which if you look on the Hoovering social media at The Hoovering Pod will by now have stopped being secret and be thoroughly announced. Come and see me on tour with my new show Wench. I'm on tour right now, right through until the end of November. I would love to see you as I come through near to wherever you live. Links to all the things I've just mentioned, including everything interesting that Jonathan and I mentioned throughout the podcast, are as ever in the podcast notes. Anything longer than a tweet you want to send me, you can also email me through my website, which is where there are also links to all of my live shows, jessicafostercue.com. Huge thanks to Acast for hosting the podcast. Hoovering is produced by Emma Corsham and the music is by Mike Greenway. Until in 2 weeks, happy hoovering.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to Quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.